Radio 84, where you hear the top local stories at the top of every hour, headlines at the half hour, and bulletins at once. 84 WHAS, Kentuckiana's news, weather, and traffic station.
WHAS, storm team forecast.
I'm meteorologist Ken Schultz. It'll be partly cloudy overnight, warm and muggy, our low 71. Tomorrow, a weak cold front will be in the area, so that's going to set us up for some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Our high temperature tomorrow around 90, and once that cold front gets into the territory, it's going to be slow to leave, so a chance for showers exists tomorrow night. Our low 70, and Sunday, partly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms with high temperatures topping out around 89 degrees. I'm meteorologist Ken Schultz.
We have mostly cloudy skies, 85 degrees in Louisville. I'm Sandra McQuarrie, News Radio 84, WHAS, Kentuckiana's news, weather, and traffic station. Depend on it.
From the banks of the mighty Ohio in downtown Louisville, this is the Joe Elliott Show on 84 WHAS. Call 571-8484 or toll free 1-800-444-8484.
And good evening. Welcome into a very special edition of the Joe Elliott Show. Always appreciate you being along. We're at 9 minutes after 9 o'clock. And tonight, we're going to relive some of the great history of a radio station that has been the soundtrack of our lives for those of us who have grown up around these parts. 75 years ago today, radio station WHAS signed on the air.
This is WHAS, the radio telephone broadcasting station of the Courier Journal and the Louisville Times in Louisville, Kentucky.
There have been a lot of changes, a lot of water under the bridge, of course, in that 75 years. But the station has maintained an image of community service, focusing on news, weather, sports, traffic, whatever's going on in the area. Certainly the goal of Judge Bingham would be to bring information and entertainment to people all around the region, and that is certainly what this radio station has tried to do over the past 75 years. And tonight we're going to look back a little bit, talk with some of the voices that you've heard on this radio station over the past several years. We're going to listen to some of the great moments and have some fun with you tonight. So I hope you'll have a chance to join us. Lots of your favorites are coming up here, and one of the first guys I wanted to bring on here is a gentleman who is the program director of WHAS Radio, a man who has been here for the last couple of years. You know, the most important thing that a program director has to do here is he really has to understand. He has to get it. He has to realize what the station is. I think it took, when Rick Belcher toured the place back in June of, what would it be, 95 or so, mm-hmm. I think he understood very quickly what this radio station was about. Jumped on board, and he has certainly maintained that tradition. And Rick, this is, I know you've only been here for a couple of years, but you know what a special night this is for everybody.
Well, it is, because one of the things that one quickly knows about WHAS is that it's an honor to work at a radio station like this. For many of us in our careers, this becomes what is known in the business as a destination station. This is not one of the stations you work at for a couple of years and then just move on. Even people who have moved on, and there have been some that have gone other places, always will have a special place in their heart and on their resume, so to speak, because they did work at WHAS. And there are those of us who will just be here because this is a great station to be at. And I think honor is not too small a word to put on it. I really am honored to be here, and I think others are as well. And you sense that when you walk into the place. You sense that whenever you talk to somebody who is from Louisville or Kentucky or anyone who listens to this radio station, and there are people all over the country, and they do call me, I do hear from them, you get this sense of the radio station, which is a rather remarkable thing.
Milton Metz also joins us. Milton, a longtime voice on this radio station. Have you done about every job in this building, Milton, over the past however many years?
I was thinking about it. I think I did farm reports. I can't think of what I haven't done here. I don't know how well I did it, Joe, but I did it.
Well, we're going to surprise you with a little piece of tape here that Rick found deep in the bowels of the radio station here. We didn't know it existed, but we're going to go back to...
Now, am I going to like this, Joe? I mean, am I being set up here?
I don't know. The way he's looking at me, Joe, I'm not sure.
maybe we should play this at the end of the show instead of the beginning of the show, but we're going to have some fun here. We're going back to 1946 for a special Matinee with Mets on 84 WHAS.
The sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. 'Tis summer, the children are gay. The corn...
And speaking of corn, here's Matinee with Mets.
Hi, gang. This is your afternoon guide, Milt Metz, with another issue of Matinee with Metz. We're heard Monday through Friday, 1:15 to 1:45. We have guests for you today, including our renowned Austrian musician, composer, and conductor friend, Professor Friedrich von Schulzenheimer. However, he'll be heard later on in the program. And now, with our pink eyes and noses twitching, Hutzel and his harebrained crew, we're saluting the rabbits this week, are heard in something called Who Do You Love, I Hope?
Who was that guy?
Hutzel and his harebrained crew, as introduced by your congenial host there.
Well, there were several very kind of significant people in the history I want to tell you and Rick.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who sang the opening is Tom Cactus Brooks.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yes. He sang pretty well a cappella.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And the fellow who introduced me was one of the best-known morning men we ever had, a fellow named Bud Abbott.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Not mm-hmm. not the Bud Abbott of Abbott and Costello.
Right.
But that was when there was live musicians. Now, that sounded like a recording. It was Bob Hutzel was the director. It was a 14-piece orchestra, would you believe it? There were two vocalists, a man and a woman. There was my show, and they had a second banana. There were two guys, and we tried a little comedy, a little interview stuff, a little music. But the idea of supporting, these days, live orchestra is mind-boggling. And yet it was commonly done in those days.
You had dozens of musicians on the staff, right? Because you had a live orchestra. You also had country music bands who were employed by the radio station. I mean, the station didn't play recorded music as much. They made their own music.
The first radio cowboy singer we had was a guy named Roy Starkey. Sounded exactly like Wallace Wilkinson. And then he was succeeded by Randy Atcher. And you're right about live musicians. There were instruments all over the place. Violins, saxophones, because they had their gigs here and they left their instruments in the studios, which at that time was in a fireproof warehouse at 3rd and Liberty.
Well, one of the things I noticed on the floor plan of the building that we're in right now, which I think the construction took place in 68 or 69, is that the office that I'm currently in was the musician's lounge.
Really?
This is where they hung out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It later became the office of a deposed manager.
I don't know.
There were eight of us. What are there in there? 15 of us in there now?
Something like, at least.
And he had it by himself. Never did anything. Sat there the whole day. Had a whole... whole room, and now there are 15 of us in there.
You know, the thing about it is, though, at that time, you guys did a little of everything. You were doing staff announcing, you were doing just whatever needed to be done, you were plugged into it, right?
Yeah, we did news. Would you believe I once did a Davis Cup tennis tournament on radio?
Boy, tennis on the radio. I'm trying to get a concept of how well that would work.
The only thing worse than that was would be describing a dance, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess we do a steamboat race and a fireworks display and all of those kinds of things. It is the theater of the mind, I guess. We're talking with El Mezzo, with Rick Belcher, Tony Cruz, Van Vance. A cast of thousands will be joining us as we roll along here tonight. As we go to break, let's hear a little more of Matinee with Mets on 84 WHAS.
Well, we reached the halfway point on Matinee with Mets, and we'll be back to the desecration room in just a moment after a station identification and a short bit of commercialism. We must have that, you know. Now, how about a little theme, Bob, till 1:30?
We'll return in just one moment. This is WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky. A transcription.
Sing a song of Lipton, Lipton T.E.A.
Yes, Lipton, the tea that's found in more teacups than any other brand in the world. Lipton, the tea that young folks and grown-ups alike really enjoy.
Lipton tea is always B-R-I-S-K.
That's right, friends. Lipton tea is brisk. In fact, brisk is the tea expert's own word for that famous Lipton flavor.
Brisk means richer flavor, lively as can be.
Right again, folks. Brisk flavor means more enjoyment because Lipton's always taste so spirited and full-bodied, never flat or dull.
Blended to perfection, brisk Lipton tea.
Yes, get a package of brisk Lipton tea at your grocer's and try it. Once you do, you'll say, Lipton tea, that's for me.
Live the dream. With 84 WHAS at the Home Run Derby, you and three of your friends could win the chance to knock one out of Tiger Stadium and compete for the national title of Home Run Champs. All proceeds and entry fees benefit the American Heart Association. The Home Run Derby takes off Saturday, August 9th at Cardinal Stadium. For details, call 587-8641. From the Louisville Redbirds and
84 WHAS.
Here is the WHAS Storm Team forecast from meteorologist Ken Schultz. He says partly cloudy, warm, down to around 71 overnight tonight. Then partly cloudy with a 40% chance of thunderstorms and a high of 90 for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with scattered thunderstorms and a low near 70. And for Sunday, partly cloudy, some scattered thunderstorms once again, a daytime high of 89. Right now, partly cloudy. It's 85 in Louisville from your official weather station, 84 WHAS, celebrating 75 years of broadcasting. It was on this date, July 18th of 1922. When this radio station signed on the air. We're talking with Milton Metz and Rick Belcher and lots of other voices to come tonight on our special 75th anniversary party here at 84 WHAS. Milton, you had been here for several years, and somebody somewhere got the idea to have a talk show. Tell me how that came about.
Well, I had just come back from vacation at that time. It was in the late 50s, and George Walsh, who was the program director at that time, had heard of a program on the West Coast where people called in their opinions. And he got a tape of it and played it. And in my absence, they decided that they would give the program to me. Now, nobody knew anything about it except what we got on the transcription. Certainly, I had never heard a talk show before.
Now, you know what happens when the one guy who doesn't show up for the meeting, sometimes he gets absolutely stuck.
Well, you're right. That's what Kaywood Ledford used to say. Kaywood said, he said, I used to miss those Friday meetings all the time. He says, until I heard that if you weren't there, they blamed everything on you. So he says, in self-defense, I would attend all of them.
Is that what happened? Is this something that you wanted to do, or did you come back from vacation and they said, hey, Metz, guess what your next assignment is?
No, they asked me. As a matter of fact, it turned out really to be the best thing that ever happened to me at the station because it led to everything else. I mean, you do 2-3 hours of ad-libbing. You can do television. You can do street reporting. You mm-hmm. can do commercials, anything, because you don't have a script. Many times, not many times, but sometimes a guest wouldn't show up. In the beginning, Joe, the station did not believe in the cult of personality, so they never named programs after people. Instead of calling the morning show the Jim Walton program or the Bud Abbott show, they would call it Funfair AM, some prosaic title like that.
Okay.
And in the afternoon, they would call it Funfair PM, a total lack of imagination. So they called my program Juniper 52385. That's when there were prefixes on phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they decided to call it Metz Here.
Now, that show started, if I remember correctly, in, 1959?
Right, very good.
In 1959, and when you walked into that studio for the first time, were you concerned that because people had never really heard talk shows in this area, you got to remember, this was not a... We have so many talk shows on the air now, we had none on then. Were you all concerned that people wouldn't know what was going on and people wouldn't call?
Exactly. You got it exactly, Joe. Your fear as a talk show host in the beginning is...
Been there.
What if nobody calls, you see? Then my secondary one was, I forgot the phone number. Well, I was nervous. You know, I had never done that. Nobody had ever done that before. You always talk to the audience. The audience never talked back. So it was a new experience. I remember the topic of my first show.
Which was?
Was, should Khrushchev be invited to the United States? A pretty good topic.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat, somebody called and my heart flew out of my throat. It was really wonderful. And from then on, it took off very well, and except occasionally I would forget the phone number, and then they printed a big sign and put it in front of me, so I'd always know it was Juniper 52385.
Was it a program that the audience took too quickly?
It seemed to, yes. I must say, in all modesty, that if you measure the number of calls, they were steady and consistent from day one. And maybe because of the novelty at the beginning, and then I hope throughout the end of it, maybe because of the integrity of the program. By integrity, I mean giving everybody a fair shake at their opinions.
Now, George Walsh and the management, they had a very definite philosophy, if I remember correctly, the things I have heard and read and in talking to you, that they wanted the audience to talk back. They did not want El Mezzo to engage in some serious dialogue, did they?
Well, they didn't talk much about that. They didn't. I think what was good about it, they gave me no marching orders.
Really?
I decided it would be very difficult to take a point of view,
mm-hmm.
because then you have to know everything about everything, and that is a very difficult position. And that's where, you know, I disagree with a lot of the talk show philosophy today. My idea was to be as neutral and down the middle as possible, because I felt if it was a talk show, it was not a talk show for the host. It was a talk show for the callers, for the listeners.
Well, it by any measure has been one of the most successful talk shows ever on the air. What, 34 years,
right,
I think?
Right.
And would probably still be on the air today. You were in a situation where you were getting home every night at midnight, and I can understand after 34 years of that, where you might decide you want to spend a little more time at home during the night. I'd be interested to hear from both of you, and Rick, maybe I'll start with you here, how the business of talk shows has changed over the last, gosh, 35, 40 years now. We do so much talk on this radio station, and now, because there are so many talk shows, if you're going to do a talk show on this station, it has to be a special talk show. Well, how's all that changed?
Well, of course, I think what's happened here is people have explored new ways of doing it. There were certain ways, I think, in the beginning that were defined, as Milton described it. I think that in when you have a situation where there's more than one talk show on at a time in a given market, you find that the host or the radio station will try to define what it is and make a difference somehow. And so you get people experimenting. You get people taking points of view. You get people who don't take points of view. They do this, they do that. It's been, I think, a wonderful thing for AM radio, because it's an area where AM radio really does excel. And people like Rush Limbaugh agree or disagree with Rush. He certainly has used the element of entertainment. He's a former disc jockey, and
right.
he understands certain things about how to use production elements, how to use a parody song, how to do all these various things, and that's worked very well for him. Now, other talk show hosts, in their own ways, define themselves and come up with different things that support what they do in a way that Rush does with him. But I think that's sort of how it's evolved.
I think one of the strengths of this radio station is that all the talk shows and the talk show hosts are very different.
Well, that's very much true. And I think in a talk show, the whole thing is the host. I mean, the callers will be very important to it. But the way the host approaches it will change very dramatically the personality and the feel you get from the radio station at that moment.
Milton, what's your feeling on the way talk shows are done now, and how the whole thing has evolved over the last 35 plus years?
Well, I think the principal change that came about was, of course, was the incursion of television, and so many things had to change as a result of it. There are certain seminal things that happened at this station. One, of course, was the fact that we were a pioneer in 1922. The 37 flood was another high water mark. The 74 tornado, the Crusade for Children. These are high marks, but I would add two more to that. One is the sale of the properties by the Binghams,
mm-hmm.
From a family operation, which happens so much in this country. And then the incursion, as I said, of television. So you went away from live musicians. You could know it was no longer economically feasible to have a studio orchestra. You didn't have soap operas anymore, because TV soap operas took over. So radio had to find new sources of entertainment and also of revenue. And as a result, you got disc jockeys, and then you got talk shows. about that. One of the big changes in talk shows was that many talk show hosts, if not all of them, but many of them, become politically partisan.
And that is true. That is certainly a difference in the genre today. We're going to come back and talk more with El Mezzo about some of his most memorable shows. We'll also hear from Ray Shelton a little later on in the next half hour, and a lot more coming up on 84 WHAS. Bob Dries and the Saturday Morning Crew. Get your day started off the right way tomorrow morning. Don't miss a thing on Kentucky at His News, weather and traffic station 84 WHAS.
It's 9:30. I'm Sandra McQuarrie, News Radio 84 WHAS. Hurricane Toss Seas have apparently claimed the life of a boater in the Gulf of Mexico. Officials in Fort Morgan, Alabama, say a man's body was found in the surf near a swamped sailboat. Hurricane Danny is packing 70-mile-an-hour winds. Attorney General Ben Chandler's office is trying to have a witness who spoke to reporters about his appearance before a special grand jury investigating the 1995 gubernatorial election held in contempt of court. The hearing is scheduled for August. 2 weeks on the red planet and all systems are still go for the Mars Pathfinder probe and its Sojourner rover. Scientists say the probe has radioed home a new view of a distant peak while the rover has gathered data on the composition of a rock nicknamed Scooby-Doo. The WHAS Storm Team forecast from Ken Schultz. Partly cloudy tonight with a low 71. Tomorrow partly cloudy with a 40% chance for thunderstorms, a high 90. Tomorrow night mostly cloudy with scattered showers, a low 70. And the outlook for Sunday, partly cloudy with scattered thunderstorms, a high near 89. We have partly cloudy skies, 85 degrees in Louisville. I'm Sandra McQuarrie, News Radio 84 WHAS, Kentuckiana's news, weather, and traffic station. Depend on it.
Joe Elliott on Kentuckiana's news, weather, and traffic station, 84 WHAS.
Welcome back. It's the Joe Elliott Show on 84 WHAS. We're talking with Milton Metz tonight. Also, Rick Belcher is here. A little later on, we'll have a cast of thousands joining us. We're expecting to hear from Mr. D. Wayne Perkey and Terry Miners, and Tony Cruz will be back here in just a little bit. Van Vance, cast of thousands will be with us, and some voices
didn't
you
open
from the
a
past.
Cake?
Did we open the cake?
Yes.
We haven't done any of that stuff here.
Hey, man.
We should do that. Tony Cruz, of course, has joined us once again.
Your lovely bride, Jenny.
Yes, sir.
Wanted to celebrate for you on this lovely show.
Wait a minute. Who is this guy?
We were having a very respectful program here. I mean, we were getting some things accomplished.
Aren't you glad he came in?
And someone rolls in like this.
That's exactly right.
I got a tie and a coat on.
You know, only Mets can get away with lies because of his class.
That's right.
But anyway...
Even I knew better than that one, Milton. I mean, you know, didn't even fool me on this one.
Jenny brought in a cake for you, Mr. Elliott, to celebrate with the whole HAS family. It says, Happy 75th birthday, 84 WHAS.
This is a real surprise for me. Although, knowing my wife, it really shouldn't be a surprise because she knows how important this is to me.
It's big, and there's some bubbly there, too.
Yeah, we have some bubbly served as well. Of course... I'm a Baptist, so I'm really having a hard time dealing with this issue right now.
But you don't have too hard a time, Cruz, man. I know you.
Well, it says grape. It says wine. There's something in the Bible about wine and good for the stomach, so we'll have to pour this out.
Should we call Mr. Mays and get a waiver here, Rick? Is that...
That's the one thing about going out over 38 states. There's always a chance.
That's right. You know? You just never know.
He listens to this program. He told me he listened.
Really?
In San Antonio, yeah.
Well, good.
And we're still all here.
I hope he does listen.
Hey,
yeah, Tony, break that baby open. And
all right, we'll do that.
Well, while you're doing that, I want to talk to Milton about some of his most memorable shows because...
What about the ones I remember?
Well, there have been so many... And it has touched so many people's lives. Let me just point you in one direction first, Milton, and then I want you to go wherever you want to go. But the things that I remember most about the Mets program were the nights after the tornado in 74, the hurricanes in the early 80s, where people in South Carolina couldn't get any other station but WHAS. And you and the radio station really shined because you were there for people, giving them a lot of help.
I think that's one of the great strengths of this wonderful radio station. Was when we like laughs are big here. We like to make fun and so forth. But when the chips are down, when there is a natural occurrence, a catastrophe like the 37 flood, which preceded me, or the tornado. The tornado I remember very well because I spent 8 hours where you're sitting now.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick Gilbert, our chopper pilot, he was one of the few guys who could fly and report at the same time, which is, you know, really either one of those a full-time job. And after, and he stayed a quarter of a mile or less in back of this fearsome tornado.
There's the champagne.
There I go.
Right in the middle of yeah. Milton's story.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean for it to...
Continue with the Gilbert story. We're going to hear from Dick Gilbert
anyway,
a little later.
Anyway, Gilbert, who was just terrific, you know, and Gilbert looked just like a motion picture version of what a chopper pilot. He wore a silk scarf. He had that auburn hair and an auburn mustache and a rakish look, and he wore the coveralls. And yet, when he had, I thought, what a darn fool he was to be so close to the tornado, because he was up there reporting. It was an absolutely Academy Award performance.
It was.
And I was here in the studio taking calls and sending messages. It was very thrilling, especially as we lost no lives. So it was very exciting, although there was a lot of destruction of trees and buildings. The next day I saw Gilbert and I said, Dick, tell me the truth. I said, either you're the biggest darn fool in the country, or you know something we don't know. He says, no, I was never in any danger. I could track it, and I stayed a quarter mile behind it. It was a very thrilling time that people who went through it will never forget.
It sure was dramatic radio to listen to, and I can remember, I was here at the time. I was safe at home, but I was listening to you. One of the great stories I remember, you were... People may or may not understand, but we are really flying by the seat of our pants at a moment like that, because calls are coming in from everywhere. The news team is gathering everything they can. I mean, people are running around this building. It is chaos with a purpose, I guess, is the right way to say it. I remember Wendell Ford called you from Frankfurt to check in and let you know that things were okay.
That's right, and there was another very touching call. I have some friends named Underhill who had a house that they lived in up off Brownsboro Road. At the same time, they had just bought Kentucky Towers, which is formerly the Kentucky Hotel. At any rate, their home was completely destroyed, and they had a vintage cabin in the back of the house that they had lovingly put together with logs brought in from a couple of states. There wasn't a splinter left. Mm. They found stuff in the state of Ohio and Indiana, and the house was leveled. These people called that night and offered some rooms for refugees in their Kentucky Towers, and they were completely destroyed. Two stories like that went on the air and made it so melodramatic.
You know, Joe, you have benchmarks in your life. I think that the 74 tornadoes is a benchmark in the life of this radio station.
I agree.
It was, at that time, I was 13 years old, about to become 14 years old, and that is the night that I became an HAS addict. That's when, mm-hmm. you know, I discovered, for example, you know, Milt's talk show, and from that point on, it seemed like everybody listened to Wayne Perkey, at least in my family and my household, and... I will never forget it, all the information that came forth that evening. I remember seeing a tornado start right in front of us. We were over close to the Brownsboro Road area. It was very frightening. We had, at the time, we were hooked to another radio station, but still even then, HAS had made such a presence with news and information that we went, you know, right to it. But I will never forget that, and that made me an HAS addict. At that
A little later on tonight, we're going to talk with some of the folks who covered that tornado, and we'll hear some excerpts from Dick Gilbert. But another series of shows that you did, Milton, which was absolutely groundbreaking at the time. Now we have Dr. Ruth and Love Lines and all these kinds of things. Tell me about how Dr. Gene Kaler, who was and is a sex and family therapist, began appearing on your program, because that was a pretty serious risk to take, I think.
See, that was one of the good things about the program. There were no talk shows that they could emulate. The nearest ones were far away, so they let me, you know, be alone on the vine, as it were. The executives were home. Sometimes they listened, sometimes they didn't. If the phones went out, I must tell you about that. I died several times over. And the next day, I would, you know, the dumb program director and manager would say, yeah, that stuff, we'll have to have it fixed.
That's right.
And you try to do a phone-in show, Rick, without the phone working?
Oh, yeah.
We've been there.
But there were halcyon days. The guys fooled around. They would, when we would do station breaks, there were a wonderful bunch of guys. They would do practical jokes. You don't get that much nowadays because there's too much at stake in the way of you don't want to offend a sponsor or lose your job. But once the guys would wait till the last minute to do a station break, when they would hear, when we were with CBS, as the network announcer would say, this is the Columbia Broadcasting System, an announcer would make a mad dash to the studio to... followed up by saying, and this is WHAS in Louisville. Well, this one time, they had put the microphone in a paper bag and fastened it with a rubber band, and they had sent it up to the air because it was on a retracted kind of thing, and then they filled the studio full of folding chairs, and then when this fellow came in on the last second, as they're saying, this is the Columbia, he opened the door to find 2 dozen chairs he had to stumble over. He reached for the mic. It wasn't there. It was up by the ceiling. He's clawing at it. It was great fun in those days.
Well, how did it go?
I love it when a program director...
Yeah.
I love it when our program director is laughing about this right now. Now, does that mean we can get by with it?
Well, you know, one of the great things you learn, and I bet Milton will attest to this when you do the nighttime show, is when the program director or the general manager asks you how things went last night, there's really only one answer. You say... okay, right?
Because
you never know who's listening. You never know if they were listening or not. So you always say, it's going... Did you hear last night's show? If they say no, gosh, it was a great show.
It was unbelievable.
You were asking about the sex
program. About Dr.
Program.
Kaler, right.
I felt very strongly about that. I thought that we could do a real service. Earlier, there had been another...
I know you helped me. Oh, go ahead.
I was sure.
He needs some more help here, too.
Well, you'd be surprised how many people would come to some of the guest psychiatrists. I heard we had a guy working here, and as the psychiatrist who was on with me left the studio, as was the case in many times, people would approach him. This guy came up, you all know, and he would say, Doctor, I got to talk to you. My life is a perfect mess. And I figured that was my cue to walk away, and I hope he helped him.
That
anyway,
still happens in here today, Milton.
Free psychiatric advice. Dr. Long, there was a guy named Dr. Robert Long who we did a program called It's Okay to Talk About Sex. And we did that. That was done on TV and a little bit on radio. And then I met Gene Kaler, a wonderful person who had a wonderful sense of humor and yet a wonderful grounding on sexual dysfunction. And we discovered that we could talk about these things freely without doing cheap shots, Joe, you know, about making cheap sexual jokes.
Sure.
And people would call up with problems, and because they were anonymous, they would they would reveal themselves and they would ask questions. And there were a few sensibilities that were bruised, but most people enjoyed it.
And somebody asked what the finger was, and Dr. Kaler told them that meant.
In four-letter words, yes, I shall not repeat.
We don't have to do that, right? We don't have to go there.
We don't have to go there, but you know, that's the thing, Milton, is because you all weren't cutting up about it and that type of thing, people knew they could trust the information that they were getting. I think that's what made your segments with Dr. Kaler so much different than some of the other shows that have come after it where... You know, it's kind of a send-up. It's kind of a put-on. You really maintain that integrity of correct information.
Yeah, we weren't grim about it. I mean,
right.
Face it. If you look at it, sex is funny. It really is funny.
Really?
I mean...
Nobody's picking up. You hear that?
Your wife is on the phone here, too.
Yeah. She said especially... Yes.
That's right.
Well, you know, yeah, when I look in the mirror, I guess I see your point.
We're going to take a quick break here and come right back. It's the Joe Elliott Show. Hey, listen, I know when to bail. It's the Joe Elliott Show on 84 WHAS. It's our 75th anniversary party. This is Joe Elliott in the studio with El Mezzo, Tony Cruz, Rick Belcher, the WHAS program director. They're all here. We'll be talking to some other folks throughout the night here. Just a quick story here, Milton, before we get into some other things. Did you ever have a guest who just went absolutely ballistic on you?
What do you mean, in what way, Joe?
Well, I had a guest one night who showed up drunk.
Oh, yeah.
And did you ever have a guest who...
I produced the show. I know.
And Tony produced the show.
And I know her, too.
Yeah, we...
I think I introduced you to her.
I think you did, Metz.
I'll tell you what happened one night. I had a Hollywood dog trainer. And in the middle of the program, he told me he had to leave. He had a trained dog, could do all kinds of things. He had to leave to catch a plane back to L.A., and he hadn't told me that before. I said, well, I can't go on. I said, I don't know anything about you're taking your dog with you, and I don't know anything about it. You should have told me. He says, I'm sorry. And he stormed out of the studio, and as he did, the dog bit me in the leg. Now, you think you got it tough.
The dog didn't give him any respect either. Huh?
The dog was a little better trained than you thought.
What can I tell you? We're about 9 minutes before 10 from 84 WHAS. One of the gentlemen who used to fill in for El Mezzo and was a longtime voice on this radio station is with us via the telephone now. He was here from 1950 to 1975. And he was one of my idols growing up because this is one of those guys who could look at 12 pages of copy for about 30 seconds and read it absolutely flawlessly. And he joins us from his home tonight. Ray Shelton is with us. Ray, how are you?
Joe, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
How are you?
Hello, Milton. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Ray.
And others in the studio. You say such nice things, Joe. Go right ahead.
You were the man. And in fact, if I can just interject a quick personal note, I knew Ray. He did some teaching with me at his broadcasting school. I went to his school back about the time I was 15 years of age. And when other people were encouraging me not to get into this business and all of that kind of thing, Ray was always very encouraging and always very helpful. And I've never forgotten that, Ray, and I always appreciate the encouragement that you gave me over the years.
I'm proud to say I'm glad that you have done so well, and you do a great job on the show.
Well, you used to host this show many nights, didn't you, in Milton's absence?
Right. I guess 15, 17 years, something like that. I never had the dog bite, though.
Ray, tell them what my nickname for you is.
It's Honey Throat.
Now, that's Honey Throat.
Honey Throat is...
Well, that's appropriate.
That's a compliment.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to ask you, Ray, as you have been a longtime broadcaster and still do some commercial work, all those kinds of things. Are the skills that were necessary to be a great broadcaster back in the days that you were breaking in, are those the same skills that you need today?
Oh, I hardly think so. For instance, let me contrast. I went there 47 years ago when Paul Clark, a prince of a guy, hired us all, as Milt will tell you. And we did what we said, staff announcing. I think there were 7 or 8 at one time, Milton.
Yeah, there were a lot.
And so you did anything from a station ID to maybe a network feed if it came along. But basically, a few other fellows were doing talent shows. But you did about anything that came along. And then Paul, of course, scheduled somebody to cover all periods of the broadcast day. There was never anybody who wasn't either in the booth or close by. Very little pre-recorded material. Commercials were done live. So it's a whole different world at this point than it was then, because most of you fellows are hired as talent, and you don't really do such things as staff anymore. Most things are pre-recorded, I think, right?
And you would do, you might have 6 commercial reads a day for a particular sponsor, as I understand it, and you were responsible for hanging around and being here at 1:12 or 2:32 or whatever it was and reading those things live.
Sure. You do your staff shift, and if you had somebody paying a little bit of a talent fee, in those days it was a small amount, you would hang around to do that commercial perhaps before or after your regular shift. But I was in awe when I came there because I was at a small station here. I won't mention the call letters. And, you know, I got to work with Jim Walton, Milton, Tom Brooks, Bob Lawson, people like that. So it was really a step up for me.
Ray, what was that? Occasionally network shows would come to town and you auditioned and you were the announcer for the national hookup. Was it Art Linkletter or?
No, I got to do the show for the Sullivan Show, but that was on the TV side. Sullivan Show in 71, just before he ended his run.
You were the sixth Beatle, weren't you?
Right, no.
Didn't you spend a summer as a staff announcer for CBS or something?
No, I got a chance to go. I auditioned CBS in 53. And what it was a summer hire, and they picked the top three, and number one went. Number two, I did not go, and number three, a fellow named Bill Gilliam did go, and stayed about 22 years with CBS. Just retired a couple of years ago.
Thank
so it was good and nice to be asked to be go up with CBS.
You did so many things here, many of them on the TV side. You did TV weather, as Milton did. You did that for about 4 years and so many other things. But you were also a disc jockey here on the radio station, were you not?
Yeah, and in those days, you know, we worked with an engineer. Across the glass was your buddy who played the music. And then he pre-recorded things, and you had to cue him, and you had to give him signals and this sort of thing. You don't do that now, do you?
Well, guess what? We're coming full circle on that,
are
right?
Are you?
Oh, yeah. We're going back to that because of the amount of talk shows that we do.
Yeah.
And this works much better. But in a music situation, you're right, that's unusual.
I want to say, if I could, Joe, something about my old friend Ray Shelton. He prided himself at one time on being the youngest announcer, which was just an accent of nature, but through it all.
Is that good or bad?
Well, I'm getting to the good part.
Okay.
But actually, this is one of the most congenial, affable associates any of us ever had here. Never heard him raise his voice in anger. And always a delight to have around the station.
Thank you, Milton.
Yeah, the other reason that I really wanted to have Ray on is because he is one man I've known over the years who really understands the... I don't mean to make such a big deal about this, but I can't emphasize it enough. The magic, the majesty of the broadcast business. You're one of those guys who really understands, took so seriously what you did, and you were so professional about it that I think it was just a... It's great to have you as a part of this program.
Well, I appreciate that. Milt will recall a couple of things before I leave, and I know you need to get on. We signed off, Milt, as most stations did in the city, as you remember it, after the 12 midnight news for many years.
Yeah.
And also, when Bud Abbott did, was it Kentucky Calls America?
That's right. It was an all-night program.
We were heard every place, including Japan, on a submarine or something of the kind. There's a lot of great history behind this station. When I heard Hutzel on your opening cut and that full orchestra, man, I thought, boy, was I living well, and I've always known that.
Well, it had a big sound. I thought it sounded like a big orchestra, and which it really was.
I'd never heard your show a half hour every day.
There was a gentleman who called me yesterday, last night, in fact, who was in World War II and was in Germany very late in the war, and he said there were moments when the skip was rolling in late night when he could hear WHAS and was really in touch with home. And boy, that's a memory that I think I'll keep with me for a while. What a great story that was.
Well, Joe, you're doing a great job. I'm enjoying being with you. I started in 1950, stayed till 75, as you mentioned, and I still, with pride, mention WHAS, so... it was very rewarding for me, and being hired at 22, I really was privileged to work with the top talent in Louisville.
Well, you have been and are one of the top talents in Louisville, Ray, and I thank you very much for being on the program with us tonight.
Congratulations.
Take care, Ray. Good luck, Ray.
Bye.
Good night, Ray.
We're going to take
one of those guys that have just one of the beautiful voices in this city.
We're going to take a quick break, come back after the news on 84 WHAS. Welcome back. It's the Joe Elliott Show on 84 WHAS, 9 minutes after 10 o'clock. You and I together until midnight tonight and every night. It is 75 years to the day when 84 WHAS Radio signed on the air. And we're joined by some more folks. Terry Miners is here in the studio along with Van Vance is joining us. Rick Belcher is here from the WHAS Programming Department. And I want to bring on the radio god of the city of Louisville, the man... we want to be nice about this. How about if we say the man who operates six of the best seven stations in Louisville? Could we get away with that so we could make people guess what the other station is and it doesn't sound like we have all the marbles? Bob Shearer is on the phone. How are you, Bob?
Hey, Joe. How you guys doing?
We're having fun down here. We miss you, but we're having a lot of fun down here. I have your nemesis, Terry Miners, here who... I got to ask you before we do anything else, do you really say hi, guy, all the time?
Terry got me into that habit, so
hey,
I do try to say it at times.
Hey, guy.
Hi, guy.
Bob's got to live up to the reputation now. I've known Bob for years, of course, and he didn't say hi, guy, all the time until Terry really started, but now Bob's got an image to uphold, don't you, Bob?
I think one day we were passing the hall, and Terry, you might remember this, and I think I said, hi, guy. And that was one time, probably, and I think he picked up on it and used it forever.
That's right. Well, you have to find a signature phrase, and that's yours.
I'm glad I said something clean.
You always do. You're squeaky clean. That's why this station's run so well, Robert. They're not coming here. The federal guys aren't kicking the front door in, dragging you away in chains twice a week, like they do at J-Corps with J-Corps executives.
Bob, that's the thing I got to ask you, because there's a lot of 50,000-watt clear channel stations at clear channel, small C, clear channel stations around the country who, you know, they have a big signal, but they sure don't have the place in the community that that this radio station has enjoyed. What is it about WHAS that's different from some of those other stations?
Well, I think a lot of it are the people sitting around the table there with you. I think throughout the years, the people have made the difference. And also, I think that the heritage that the Binghams gave us from day one, 75 years ago, was to give quality program and to serve the community. And that community service has always, always been there. And all we've done is just nurture the thing along even more.
And as things change a little bit, we try to change with the times. What was life like when you came here out of college in 1963? If I remember my history correct, you had just kind of been, you kind of took this job while you were looking around for something else to do. And now, 34 years later, you're running six radio stations.
Well, it was sure different then. We had live music in the morning with Jim Walton, and we had Don McNeil's Breakfast Club, and we had a lot of shows. And by that time, the morning show was getting a little tired. People were tired of the live bands and things in the morning. And the company was reluctant to change because, you know, they said, no, that's tradition. That's something we've been doing for years. And it took a long time to be convinced that, you know, that the listening audience wanted something a little different.
Now, are you the guy to blame for hiring minors back in, what would it be, about 1986 or something like that?
I was part of that group that got minors. We were a little reluctant to get him.
You were not. You came over and kissed my boots and said, please.
Well, Terry, I want to tell you, we did have to call the Binghams and ask them, and they were a little reluctant. They said, no, let's get somebody else.
Yeah. You fought for me, though, didn't you?
We stuck our neck out for you.
Tell me about that a little bit, Terry. How did that whole thing come around? You were doing a morning rock and roll show, mm-hmm. one of those rock and roll...
On another station that we now own.
On another station that we now own. And I think it's fair to say it's a little different from the show that you're doing now. How did it happen that you ended up at WHAS?
There was a program director here by the name of Denny Nugent, and I guess I'd met him somewhere before, but... He knew that I wrote a lot of the pieces that he heard on this other show, and he knew what my personality was like and what I had to contribute. And so an opening emerged here on this station, and I knew someone else who was on a staff over here in the sales department. He called me and said, if I were you, I would apply. And I had a six-month no-compete contract, and I did send a letter over here that said, Bob, you probably received this. 84 reasons why you should hire Terry Miners. and Nugent told me later, as soon as he got that, he said, I knew I was going to hire you.
Wow. Bob, do you remember those days? Was it pretty much, was Terry the only real candidate that you guys were interested in at that point?
Well, you know, when it came down to it, Terry was what we were looking for. We were looking for another person to give a lot of humor in the afternoon, like a Gary Burbank did.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry had the talent, and he was incredibly creative, and he was, a preppy kid from Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
So he fit everything we wanted.
That's right. I don't believe that 84. I believe if Einstein had still been living, he couldn't have thought of 84 reasons to hire Terry.
Some of them were a trifle flimsy, I must admit.
I want to see that list. I want to know how he got to 84.
It's in my file somewhere.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Should be.
Let's talk about the radio business for just a couple of minutes here, Bob. Talk about how it's changed. How difficult is it to manage six radio stations? You've gone from managing two very successful radio stations a couple of years ago, now to be in charge of six radio stations.
Well, actually, Bill, we got seven now.
Do we have seven?
Probably one you didn't think
I
of.
Missed one somewhere. Okay.
It's a lot different. I can no longer devote all of my time to like a WHAS. You know, it has to be spread out. And... it's just considerably different. It's hard to explain. We got a lot more good people, and you know, each one of the stations are so different, and they go after a different segment of the audience, and they service the listeners different. So I've learned a lot. I mean, I've learned a lot from just having these different variety of stations.
Rick, you're also a guy who's in. Well, Bob. is the general manager. You're the programming guy who's in charge of several of those radio stations. Somebody told me the other night that they said, you know, WHAS is still the mothership, and we have all these satellites. I don't want to pick on my friends at some of the other stations, but how do you divide your time?